Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon and you are tuned to another episode of the Sideshow. You may remember some time ago, for those of you in podcast land, that we had a gentleman by the name of Philip Turville on. He is the Grow Wild manager, or at least the Grow Wild program manager. He's based at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew. Philip Turville, it's a pleasure to have you back on. How are you, my good man?
I'm very well indeed, Peter. Thank you for inviting me back. Yes, it's lovely to be here.
You're most welcome. You're most welcome. Let's get on with this one, Philip, if we can, because I watched a wee little YouTube video some weeks ago that I posted up on the Sideshow Facebook page. And for those of you listening to this, if you're on your morning commute, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com. But the video that I watched showed me at one point, was it a sewage plant in Scotland that had been returned to wild flowers, Philip? Did I get that one correct?
Absolutely. It's a remarkable sight. It's called the Waterworks in Barhead, or Barhead if you're local. It's just to the west of Glasgow in South Scotland. It's an incredible sight. It's these enormous concrete tanks, 40 metres across, derelict for 30 years, a site for fly tipping, very muddy, not desperately pleasant, but my goodness me, they won thousands of public votes in the Grow Wild vote, and suddenly, with a little bit of cash, but mainly a huge amount of community effort, they transformed the space. I was there the other day, actually. Incredibly colourful, tremendously faithful to the industrial past. You can still see the flowers and these big concrete bits and bobs, new trees popping up all over the place, and big plans to expand and get charitable status and all sorts of other things. It's a very special project, and I like it a lot. I'm not allowed favourites, but I do like it.
What is the Grow Wild project, or what is the Grow Wild programme? How does it work? How do people get involved, and how do they get involved at the very, very minor level, Philip?
Oh, fabulous question. Well, it's interesting, as you say, because we do have these big four flagship projects. They are the biggest, they are the beacons, one in Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales and England, all up and running. And they are designed as the wow factor, a large-scale urban transformation. And they do exactly that, and they involve thousands of people along the way. However, the business end, as it were, is hundreds of thousands of seed packets to individuals, millions of people coming to the website, thousands of group leaders, we call them, getting these little special kits. So the Grow Our kits, I'm very passionate about, the little black boxes. And in the little black box, you get five packets of native wildflower seeds. The ones distributed in Northern Ireland are grown and in Northern Ireland, they're native to Northern Ireland and so forth. Same with Wales and England and Scotland as well. And these are very exciting because it could be a workplace group. And there's a wonderful example of a Yorkshire ambulance service who just had a spare bit of land outside their ambulance station, applied for a kit, a Grow Wild kit, received six kits, also five packets in each, little bee houses, got together a group of people and transformed the space, and they brought people together. And that really is the point of Grow Wild. It's about bringing people together by growing, sharing, celebrating native wildflowers and plants, next year indeed fungi as well. And it's about that transformation of space by the people who live in that space. And our community projects are just such a good example of that. People write to us and say, "I've got a space," and they go, and we go, "Okay, tell us more." And they say, "I've got some people." We say, "Ooh, tell us more. Who are you working with?" It might be the YMCA group. It might be a local homeless charity. It might be the people down their road. It might be a workplace again. It may be the people outside a railway station in Chiltern. We actually have a project there. And they say, "Ben, I've got an idea to use some colourful, easy-to-grow native plants to brighten up the area. And while I'm at it, I'm going to do a massive art mural and make it really, really special, and bring in a local group of graffiti artists to paint the side of this wall." And we say, "Brilliant, have £2,500, or have four, or have one, or whatever. Write to us. We're going to come and see you. We're going to send a photographer over to you." Wonderful. So Grow Wild is everything from millions of on our website to these massive flagship projects, but all of it comes together, bringing people together, transforming spaces. And native plants are the hook, the engine, the celebration, but people at the centre.
We need to stick on a little sticking point here just for the minute, Philip, because I was in, I browsed through because somebody had said to me, well, there is a, let's call it a super discount superstore, maybe from Germany, no disrespect to them, and they were selling packets of wildflower seeds some time ago. So the question became, well, they're wildflower seeds, but where are they wild to? Is there, not so much to stick on the German discount superstore, but to stick on the variety of wildflower seeds and their origin, you noted it there briefly. How important is it to make sure that if Peter Donegan is doing a wildflower garden, let's say in North County Dublin, and you're doing one, let's say, up past Peterhead in Scotland or up past Aberdeen or, you know, somewhere in Wales, that those seeds are not just, well, we handed out these packets and we've ticked that box, that is it intrinsically important that they are very, very native to that very spot?
It is, yes, to within a country level. Region makes it a bit tricky, but it's extremely important. It's one of the fundamental principles of the project, the entire program by Q, that the seeds of Grow Wild gives away and shares with groups or individuals or food campaigns or however we get them to people. We get them to people, say Wales, for example, those are collected. We have an England and Wales mix because kind of botanically and ecologically they're very, very similar. So we contract a seed supplier to collect species from those various areas, bulk them up. We then package them up and then they're distributed in those areas. Same with Scotland, for climate and the other bits and bobs, a little bit more different up there. So they are, again, locally done. This is practically important, ecologically, botanically, and also politically important as well. Same with Northern Ireland. These things are important that we get seeds are native, but also of provenance to those countries. So it could be that there's an English species which could be bulked up elsewhere in Europe, but we wouldn't buy those. Instead, it's an English species collected from England, grown up in England, bulked up and distributed in England. And that's very important to us because that tells the right story and it uses the right both nativeness, if I can use such an expression, and provenance as well, and they're different concepts. We take this so seriously that we have developed an industry standard for it, a brand new one, a kite mark, developed by Q's Millennium Seed Bank, which, if you don't know, it's a very special organisation and the physical building that collects and preserves and researches seeds. And they advise the Grow Wild team elsewhere in Q and our suppliers how to do what I've just described and also then make sure that they do it. And we give them a mark. And we also test the viability while we're at it to make sure that those seeds we share achieve 70% germination, when they're then shared with our new growers. So we take it very, very seriously, and we thoroughly enjoy the process. Our projects are slightly different. They then research their own local plants, but again, on along a similar line. So we give guidance, but it's over to them to do the details, because obviously that's much, much more local.
There's a couple of things that I guess wowed me slightly, because to an extent, horticulture can get a bit of a bad rap. It can be seen as a little bit of, we've been here before with Sarah Venn of Incredible Edibles in Bristol. And I was saying to her that when I was growing up there, you know, it was a grown man with a beard standing next to a potting shed. And that's essentially what horticulture was. I think I was the only person in my secondary school growing up who really ventured into it. And I guess was into it at that time. And as per our conversation on a previous episode of Such Show, it seems I probably was not far off the mark. To sidetrack slightly, but also stick on the Grow Wild program. On Twitter, you have just over 14,000 followers. Your logo is Grow Wild Flowers to the People. And on Facebook, you are at just over 21,000 likes on Facebook. Not that I am such a big numbers man or that thing would endear me a little bit more towards you. Fair to say, it was mildly surprising considering this is encouraging people, nay, communities, to get together to grow wild flowers. This isn't What's in vogue. It's not a cooking program with Jamie Oliver, or it's not the Skinny Jean Gardeners, if you'll allow me put it in an entirely different context, in brackets, also former guest of the show. Did that kind of wow you, that people kind of literally turned around and went, oh my God, this literally is amazing, the work that they are doing, in brackets, en masse?
It is amazing that so many people have been generous enough to join and then share it and talk about us. As you say, on social media, our followers are abundant and lovely and very interactive. They speak to us a lot, which we like. And indeed, we have an email database of many hundreds of thousands of people who we also write to at least monthly, sometimes more, which, again, we enjoy a good dialogue with. But I think a lot of the credit, we've built that up over many years. And we've also built it up through partner organizations. And by that I mean, for example, a youth charity in the middle of Belfast. We would speak to that youth charity. I remember going to see them and saying, we've got something that we think is exciting. We've got these flowers. We've got a bee house. We've got these kits. We've got grants. We've got all these sorts of things. We've got youth grants as well. And saying, would you please share it with your networks? And they'll go, yes. Can we do anything in return? They say, yes, you can, or maybe not at all. Or, you know, and in that way, we get what I would phrase in Management Waffle, access to market. We get a reason and an avenue to write to 18-year-olds in the middle of Belfast who may not have heard about the idea of growing flowers or may have preconceptions, as you describe, but that's not for me. And suddenly they see literature, they see videos, they see other aspects where it's showing people like them growing flowers. Just today I've been looking at two videos which are brand new commissioned, are going out next week, about a young person, 18-year-old bloke, happens to be in Brixton in South London, talking about a new grant programme we're doing. So it gives us a reason to write to people, and that partnership network times that by 200 organizations who have supported us in the last 300 years, 300 years, oh, it feels like that, 3 years, sorry, whereby those 200 partners have helped us and given us a reason to write to people. And you notice I picked on an example there from a youth charity. You know, another one would be the John Muir Trust, who are in various places around the UK, particularly a little further north, or the Media Trust, who do brilliant work through training young people and older people and charities. And you know, I could list a whole variety of intriguing examples from multiple industries. The majority are not horticultural organizations. We do a little bit, but not very much. We try and avoid some of the gardening media, not always, and we work with them sometimes, and we're very proud to do that. But a lot of we try and go to places where they may not expect to hear about wildflowers. And that's how we've begun to build up a supporter base. It's how our partners have helped us, how we've helped them. And over time, it's grown, our confidence has grown, our experience has grown. But also, it took a while to get going. You know, we had a six-month-a-year development. We had a six-month-a-year pilot. We then upscaled, and then the following year, much, much bigger. Last year, 2016, was even bigger still. 2017 is back to some piloting, and then some hopeful development work in the future. So it's, you know, these things take time. They rely on a range of organizations and partners, also enthusiastic people in the team here at Q. We have a privilege and the opportunity to employ social media experts.
They do an extremely good job of it.
They're a pleasure to work with, but they look at it from a different angle. So we have remarkably few horticulturalists in the Grow Wild team, and that's deliberate because we're trying to reach a range of people.
When you go in, Philip, and I get to do this, I guess, as part of my living of what Donegan Landscaping does, and you walk into a gardener, you almost need people to close their eyes and pretend that they're listening to the story of how the joints causeway. The idea of a joint throwing large stones into the sea so it can run back across towards Scotland is something that, as an adult, I think you either get or maybe you kind of don't.
Fionn and his wife Una lived in their castle by the sea in County Antrim. One day, a stranger arrived. It was a messenger from Scotland, a country across the sea. I bring a challenge from the mighty Angus, the messenger said. He is the tallest, strongest and most fearsome giant in all Scotland. He has heard about your great strength and wants to fight you. Angus has beaten all the other giants and you are the only one remaining. Do you accept the challenge? "Of course I accept," said Fionn. "I will begin to prepare it immediately." And so he did. From that day on, Fionn worked hard. He had decided to build a path across the sea to Scotland. It was a rather unusual causeway made up of hundreds of thousands of black rocks, all different sizes and different heights. Some rocks had 6 sides, some 8, and others more than 10 sides. The warriors of Dafina looked on in amazement as Fionn worked each day. And before the long causeway stretched miles into the sea. One evening, when Fionn returned home, he noticed that Una was worried. "What is the matter?" he asked. "Oh, Fionn," she replied, "I heard some very disturbing news today. I heard that Angus is indeed much bigger than you and that he is definitely stronger. If I cannot beat him with my strength, then we must think of a plan. I may not be as big or as strong as he is, but I am much cleverer." Fionn and Una talked for many hours. They thought of many plans, but could not find one that they were sure would work. Time was running out. Later that week, the messenger from Angus returned and told Fionn that Angus would arrive in 2 days' time. "Tell him that Fionn is ready and waiting," said Una. "Do not worry, Fionn. I have a plan in mind." Una worked hard for the next 2 days. She spent the time busily cutting and snipping and sewing and knitting. "Imagine sewing and knitting at a time like this," Fionn exclaimed. "I thought you had a plan." "Carefully," said Una, "what do you see?" Fionn was amazed. "Clothes," he said. "I see clothes, but they are most peculiar." "Never mind that," said Una, "just put them on." What a sight Fionn was. He wore a long dress on his feet. He had a pair of joint brogeans, and Una had knitted a beautiful bonnet for his head. "While you were working, I asked Fergus to make a very large cradle." "In you get," said Una. "We have no time to lose." Angus was approaching. As he walked, the ground shook. "Where is the mighty Fionn? I have travelled all the way from Scotland to find him," the giant roared. "Is he afraid to meet me?" Una opened the door. "Please come in. You are very welcome. Fionn is hunting and won't be very long. But please, sir, could you speak a little softer? Our baby is asleep." "That is your baby?" Angus gasped in shock. "Yes, he is rather small now, but he will grow," Una replied. Angus was frightened. He had never seen a baby this big. "If this is Fionn's small baby, what size is Fionn?" he wondered. "Fionn himself must be enormous." Angus hurried out, and without turning, he ran across the causeway. As he was running, a thought struck him. "What if Fionn is following me?" To prevent this happening, he began to remove the stones from the path, and by the time he arrived home to Scotland, all that was left was a few yards of path jutting out from the coast of Antrim to the sea. To this day, only that part of the causeway remains. That's the end of that story. Night.
Good night.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you the most.
You get my blanket.
I'll get your blanket, yeah. Good night.
Yeah, my thing on chair.
I'll get it for you, yeah, no problem.
In imagining a space that hasn't existed beforehand, that is a little bit uncouth, if you'll allow me use that word, and in exchange I'm saying to them now, essentially place your trust in me, give me a check. At the end of this journey, in 2-3 weeks time, 2-4 months time, you're going to turn around and go, "God almighty, that was the best money I have ever spent." When you go to a place like Scotland, when somebody says to you, "I'm unsure about this," and do you get to turn around as a grown up? And it's one of the probably most fascinating things that I have, which is my imagination. But is it a tough process to convince somebody to allow you? Because let's be frank about it, if those seeds don't germinate, you and I both know that they will, but if they don't, you're kind of in a little bit of trouble.
Indeed, yes. It's a certain leap of faith, and it's also about frames of reference. If people have and no frames of reference about what it could look like, and in so many situations, why would they have? You need to share that frame of reference, and getting at that leap of faith sometimes is tricky. And if the flowers don't germinate, or the seeds don't germinate, that also can be tricky. But again, I would refer you to that kind of the core part of Grow Art is about bringing people together. We don't really measure how many flowers actually grow. We're not all that interested. It's interesting, but it's much more interesting about who's grown them and why they've grown them and how they've come together. So we would far rather a project which has had a good go at it, done a range of things, had a bit of a laugh along the way, filmed it, put it on Twitter, filled in their profile on the Grove Art website, talked to us, we've gone to visit them. We'd far rather that journey of people getting to know each other. It's very interesting. We've got we've had the pleasure of commissioning an academic partner, a group called Forest Research, who are part of Forestry Commission. And they have researched the behavioral impact of the Grow Wild seed kits and community projects and the youth voices and the flagships and all the bits and lots of the program, and said, does it make a difference to your life? You've done this project, you did it a year ago or 2 years ago, or just you've just finished it. What difference has it made? And we've interviewed a huge number of people in our community projects. I think it's tickling 200 now. And in our other surveys, it's coming up to 100,000 people who have responded to online surveys. So it's a huge data set. And they are telling us that when they get together, when they begin to sow their seeds, whether they grow or not, they feel more connection to nature. They learn things and they share more. And other kind of well-being indicators in academic language, whereby it makes a difference to their lives. And not only that, but when you got someone started on that road, once you've given them a bit of inspiration, that inspiration generally comes from partly us, but you know, usually it needs a local spark, it needs a local champion usually. They tend to go on and do other volunteering. 30% of the people who get our seed kits, which is tens of thousands of people, 30% of them generally go on and do something else for nature or their community, which is brilliant. So they might go on litter picking, or they might start another project, or they might do an event, or they might have a chat with their neighbour, or you know, whatever. Or do something for bees and pollinators. They feel empowered, they feel able, they feel with the support from Grow Wild and also other similar programmes around the country. They have that opportunity, they have a bit of a means, and they have a confidence. And that's a brilliant thing. So this is also why we have Big Lottery funding. So Big Lottery fund our lovely people who, again, are about reaching people most in need, putting people in the lead, their job, for a range of projects. And they fund art, they fund music, they fund digital, they fund Grow Wild through flowers, they fund a range of people to do interesting things, to bring people together, to put people in the lead, to get that excitement mounting, get the skills built up, and change people's lives in various ways. And that's, again, the core of Grow Wild. So if the seeds don't grow, it's not necessarily a problem.
Let me not play devil's advocate on this one, because number one, as I explained to the last guy, here is the thing. I studied horticulture. I know that if a plant fails, that I can only tell you post it failing why it failed. I can give you as much, or I can give the plant as much of a percentage to its advantage to help it achieve and do what it's supposed to do in life. But at the same token, there is always a chance that the plant will turn around and say, I don't feel like growing. Pause, park that there. In the seed department, however, when you know that there are succession rates of 70%+, number one, human error will allow for a greater amount of that, but these are wildflower seeds. Pause. Now we know percentages. We now know approximately the human error, as in Jimmy lost half a packet, or he sowed them or stood on half a packet and they went too far below ground. You also should bear in mind that when the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew are selecting the seed to go to your area and assisting you in preparing that ground correctly, succession rates tend to be on the higher. So devil's advocate aside, I will assume that nothing goes untoward too far wrong. Philip, what's it like? And again, I'll refer to myself in this one, but you can close your eyes and you see a space. Let's pick the one in Scotland. You've seen it, and then you come back in 6 months, 9 months' time, and you see it as a field that is, you know, up to chest height with wildflowers, that is just brimming with beauty and colour. Do you get that moment where you want to kind of ring home, ring the lads, ring the guys and go, you will never guess how good this day was in my heart, in my head. In my, I just want to do a Jerry Maguire moment. Do you get those moments? And is that a kind of a privileged position to be in, if you don't mind me asking?
It is a really, really special thing. When I see sites, Scotland One is a good example. I saw it before it was built, just cleaned up, but before it was built, and I saw it relatively recently, it's in full glory. So I know the people, I've been with them for a while, and that's a very special thing. And it is a privilege to see sites and people change and get and bring other peoples together. We were lucky enough to be recipient of a National Lottery Award in 2016, which is a public vote across the country, and Grow Wild was voted the best environmental project. And as part of that process, for which I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled, but I'm mainly thrilled because I got to spend time with more and more people, participants, who told me the difference it made to their lives. It brings a tear to my eye, it really does. I get to see a bit of it, but I'm predominantly at the Royal Botanic Gardens QI, out and about a bit. But the people who we're lucky enough to have a what we call our partnership team, you know, we've got Maria in Wales and Claire in Scotland and Richard in England and Stephanie in Northern Ireland and Kate and Catherine and Tim and a whole bunch of other people who do go out much, much more and see the projects and meet the people and do support them. Our seed kit recipients, we tend to support a bit more online and then phone up a few and do case studies and go and see them and so forth. And it's a very, very special thing. And in the last year in particular, we've learnt much, much more about the people who take part. And it's rather intriguing at the moment that we're now planning, well, where does it go now? What could we do next? What do the people want? Where? What kind of sites are they identifying? What kind of challenges do they have? How can we help them do their next great project? How can we do that kind of thing? What support might we offer? What support are they like to need? And that's now the challenge. And that's also a privilege. But it's an intriguing journey. But it's got to also be renewed and refreshed and moved on. But yes, it's a great privilege to see the sites, meet the people, and that's a product of a great deal of enthusiasm from all the Grow Wild team and our partners, of course, as well.
If people are listening to this, Philip, and let's say Mary, and she's 6 years of age, 16 years of age, or 60 years of age, it's the strip opposite your house, and I say just a tiny little strip of grass outside your house, it's the embankment on the far side of the road that needs to be cleaned up, and they really want to do a little bit or a little bit more, and make no bones about it, those little dinky bits the size of a lunchbox often inspire something greater than most people realize, and equally the big projects do also something similar as well. If they want to get in touch, how do they best go about doing that?
Oh, lovely. Yes, indeed. Well, there is something for every 6-year-old, 16-year-old, and 6-year-old. There really is. And it's a very open program. Everyone can get involved. So, and the first point, of course, I would say is our website. That's got lots of step-by-step instructions. It's got videos. It's got people telling other people. You know, we videoed a lot of our people saying how they did it and what they learned, and they're fun, lively, exuberant characters often, which is also makes it a delight to watch. And with landowner permission for that little bit opposite the house, as their little lunchbox size, they can go for it. Seeds aren't expensive. We sometimes give away seeds. We have a few this year, but it's the best pause is to get them locally to you or speak to your local charities and so forth. Again, all that's online. If they can't wait, they can sow a virtual wildflower on the Grow Wild website. Get a sow section. They can sow a virtual wildflower, which is quite exciting. Make me laugh. It's a wonderful thing. You can sow a little flower. It pops up. It bubbles up on a picture of the UK. It's great. Anyway, moving on. So I think that's the first case. Again, we have some youth project funding. Again, that's online. It'll be announced on Twitter. We've got a little bit of community project funding for 2017. But again, we're just in the middle of a bit of a pilot year, testing out a few of ideas. You know, it's really a case of look out for local opportunities, look out on our website. You will soon see we're not subtle when there's a way to get involved. And indeed, campaign activities. You will find us running around London in wildflower costumes occasionally. And indeed other cities. We don't just limit it to London. We run around all sorts of places. In Manchester a couple of years ago, we hired some dancers, and they were singing about Shake, Rattle and Sew. running around in the middle of Manchester City. So thank you. That was my personal contribution to that day. But they were professional dancers singing about wildflowers with the Lord Mayor, with his chain, in the middle of Manchester, middle of summer. It was just a bit fun. They got people. It's brilliant. So these things pop up, and they're sometimes not announced. So, you know, the best thing, I think, for any 6-year-old or 16 or 60-year-old is to you know, have a look at what's going locally, have a look online, have a look at Kew, have a look at Great World, have a look at other local charities near them, and get involved and open their eyes and have a good old rummage in the native wildflower bank, so to speak.
Philip Turville is the Grow Wild Programme Manager. He is based at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew. Their website is growwilduk.com. If you're stuck for any of that, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com. Philip Turville, thank you so much for coming on the show again. It has been an absolute pleasure, my good man. I look forward to talking to you shortly.
Thank you very much indeed, Peter. A great pleasure.
Excellent. Cheers, my good man.
Take care, Peter. Bye for now.